May the words of my mouth and the meditation of our hearts be acceptable to you, O God, our strength and our Redeemer. The year 1992 was a very difficult year for the royal family in England. There were divorces and separations among the Queen's children. And then, to make things worse, in November, Windsor Castle, a place where Queen Elizabeth spent a lot of her childhood, a place which was the traditional site for certain ceremonies, and a frequent getaway from Buckingham Palace for the Queen and Prince Philip. Well, there was a terrible fire, and millions of dollars of damage took place. In a speech a few weeks later, marking her 40th year as Queen, she said in a typically understated British way, 1992 is not a year which I shall look back upon with undiluted pleasure. Then she referred to the year as an annus horribilis, meaning a year of horrors or a horrible year. That same thing might be said of the year 2020, not just in the UK or in our country, but over the whole world. COVID-19 has plagued us everywhere, with hospitals filled beyond capacity, millions around the world dying, leaving families behind grieving for people to whom they did not even get to say goodbye in person. Economies are in ruins, and millions of people are worried about how they're going to feed their family or keep a roof over their heads. Our country has also seen forest fires, experienced racial unrest, and a very conflicted election. And other countries have had their own problems too: Brexit in the UK, droughts, civil wars, terrorist attacks. A truly, in many ways, annus horribilis. And I suspect it is fair to say that as a world, we are all exhausted and hoping and praying that next year will be an annus mirabilis, or a year of miracles, a wonderful year, not another annus horribilis. And there are signs of hope. That vaccines have been developed is probably the most important and truly, in many ways, a medical miracle in the speed at which they have been developed. But the truth is, most years are a mix of horribilis and mirabilis. Think about this. In the story of Jesus' birth and the events leading up to it that we have just celebrated. First, a miracle, an angel visits Mary and tells her that she's going to be the mother of the Son of God. And Mary visits her cousin Elizabeth, who also miraculously, at a very old age, is about to have a child herself. And it's a time of joy and celebration as the two of them meet. But then Mary returns to Nazareth, an unwed young mother who is going to start showing soon. And Joseph gets wind that she is pregnant, and he's going to call off the engagement. That's pretty horrible. But the angel speaks to Joseph, and he changes his mind and does not call off the engagement. So things are progressing along, and she's probably getting everything ready for the baby to be born. And just as her due date approaches, Caesar Augustus decides it's time to take a census. And everyone has to go back to the town of their ancestors, and Mary and Joseph have to undertake a difficult journey over rocky hills to go back to Bethlehem. Mary, almost ready to deliver her child, is riding on the back of a donkey on this rugged journey, probably thinking the whole time, I cannot wait to get there and find a decent place to rest. But when they get there, all the rooms are taken, the inns are full, and so they end up in a stable. I think I'd put that on the horribilis side of the that trip on the balance sheet of their year. But then the baby is born, and shepherds come and tell of the good news that they have experienced from the angels. Wise men will come bearing gifts and worshiping him. And at today's reading, when they take Jesus to be dedicated at the temple, something that all firstborn male children have done for them, they get there and two complete strangers, Simeon and Anna, recognize the child by the grace of God and speak words of praise and joy and blessing to Mary and Joseph. What joy, what wonder, what a miracle. But also, Simeon has some words, some grave words, about the opposition that Jesus will face someday and how Mary's heart will be pierced. Well, in Jesus' own words, he came with a purpose heavenly and a purpose earthly. In John, we hear the words from Jesus' lips, for God so loved the world that he gave his only son, so that everyone who believes in him may not perish, but have eternal life. But in Luke, we read and hear words that Jesus spoke at the synagogue in Nazareth as he was beginning his ministry. And there he does not talk about eternal life, but he quotes the prophet Isaiah, saying, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has appointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free and proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. Earthly life. His mission is twofold. The life on earth, helping us live as people who live the way people wants us to live as God's people, and also the promise of eternal life. Now, our hope for a year of wonders in which the spirit of Christmas may well be continued on throughout the year is not something that will happen if we sit back passively and wait for God to make it happen. If you listened to the reading from Galatians, it tells us that Jesus came so that we might be children of God and joint heirs of eternity with Jesus. One of the images we often use for the church is the church is a family. And that's a big thing here at Zion. We really are family. But Jesus makes us not just a family of human beings, but a family of people who are the children of God and joint heirs of heaven. And whether the coming year and other years ahead are in balance or on balance more horribilis or more mirabilis is not just dependent on things outside our control, conditions such as a new virus emerging or a season of forest fires or floods, or even what God alone is doing. The balance will be deeply affected by whether we realize that as children in God's family and joint heirs, We are called to be deeply involved in the family business of sharing life, bringing light to dark places, and introducing others to our brother Jesus. The greatest miracle, I think, are not those that change the external factors around us, but those that change human hearts and behavior. So the years ahead, with all its hopes and challenges, are dependent on us to tip the balance to hope and mirabilis. I hope we will rise to that challenge. I want to close with a poem written by Howard Thurman. He was a theologian. I think he wrote about 20 books. A college chaplain at Howard University and then at the University of Boston, and a professor at the Divinity School there, and a poet. And I'm going to close with a short poem. Some of you may have heard it before, some of you may recognize the words from a Christmas carol. They have been set to music, but this is the poem, and it is called The Work of Christmas. When the song of the angels is stilled, when the star in the sky is gone, when the kings and the princes are home, when the shepherds are back with their flock, the work of Christmas begins to find the lost, to heal the broken, to feed the hungry, to release the prisoner, to rebuild the nations, to bring peace among brothers, to make music in the heart. I hope that our hearts will go forward during this holy season filled with divine music and divine joy.